welcome to the most basic cable. I am Quartz.
This is Chris.
Or CVH, as he's better known. This is our first podcast, which is awesome and weird and terrifying and all those good things. Chris and I have been talking pretty religiously about sports for the last couple of years that we've known each other. And we thought it might be a good idea to actually get together and, you know, record some of these conversations. So yesterday, Chris and I took part in the first day of the NCAA tournament, men's basketball tournament. Chris has been getting together with his friends for like a long time.
20 years,
yeah, which is really cool. And he told me about it last year, and I remember how like mad I was that I didn't take it off work and that I missed out on it. Because everyone watches it because everyone does a bracket. And so I thought it sounded like the greatest idea ever, but also mildly terrifying because it's like 13 hours.
It's a marathon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a marathon, definitely. So why don't you tell us about how you guys started this process?
Sure. So growing up, I was always into college basketball because of the Fab Five.
Right.
Kicked off there, did a bracket every year. Found myself with like-minded friends in high school. And our high school was it's a private school, and every year we had a fundraising raffle. And if our homeroom or as an individual, we sold a certain amount of raffle tickets, one of the things we could earn was a day off of school. So there were these Fridays in March that we would have off for these raffles.
Catholic school, man.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's great. Didn't have school on Fridays for like 8 weeks.
Oh, my God.
At some point through Easter in there. So sophomore year of high school, started this process where we would have these Fridays off, and I found myself over at my buddy Keith's house, and we'd watch start Thursday after school. Usually I'd spend the night there, or I'd go home and come back before noon the next day and then watch all through Friday. And we've just kept that going for years and years and years. And now we pretty much do it just the first day of the tournament, that first Thursday. Eat a lot of bad food, drink a lot of booze, watch a ton of basketball, and have a blast. So yeah. I was happy to include Court this time. I think he acquitted himself nicely.
Yeah, it was definitely like I didn't know what to expect. So we also, in addition to the podcast that everyone knows, we also started a website called mostbasiccable.com. And both Chris and I had kind of hit on a couple points that we were looking forward to for that day. Mine was that I really didn't know what to expect because it's a lot of basketball watching, which I love, but rarely do I get that much of it in one day.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, it was a bunch of people who think the same way I do about basketball, which is sarcastically, mostly, and like to also gamble on it. So like, you know, it was like I met Chris at like 10:45 at his house. We got to his buddy's house at like a little like 12:30. First game tipped at 12:15. We were there pretty much all the way through.
Yeah.
So it definitely lived up to my expectation. I was so tired when I got home last night at 2:30 in the morning that I parked my car like halfway into my neighbor's driveway. I didn't realize that until this afternoon, so that's great. It was definitely like, it was awesome. I felt like I had something to do with the tournament, which I love.
Yeah. He's part of the tradition now.
Yes, which is awesome. And then we like bucket listed it, like doing it in Vegas. Like mm-hmm. 1 year would be like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
We had kind of like our own betting system. Like we were part of a couple brackets, one bracket for the guys that were at that house. Mm-hmm. But Chris kind of had an interesting take, which he wrote about the other day, of how we would make it more interesting. Because yeah. Yesterday was crazy because there were so many close games, but usually there aren't that many close games.
Right.
So you kind of devised the idea of, you know, well, let's make it more interesting so everyone's involved. So what did you come up with?
Yeah, the thought behind it was how can you make a pool that has every game is interesting, even the 1-16 games. And the idea I came up with is that if you've got a small amount of people, 4 to 8 people would seem to work best. I devised a pool that would reward the top scorer in the game. So if you, through the system I designed, had that top scorer, you would win that game. So there was action on every game. A couple of games were pretty fun because we had, you know, guys, 4 or 5 guys within 2 or 3 points of each other with 2 or 3 minutes to go, and everybody's pulling for their guy and for their team. It worked out pretty well. The quick breakdown of the system is that there were six of us. We had a list randomizer that we used. And if you, for that particular game in the list randomizer, if you were number one, you got the top scoring player on the highest seeded team. If you were number two, you got the top seeded scorer on the lower seeded team, and so on and so forth through six. So the top three scores on each team were allocated to people. If your guy wasn't playing, which happened to one of the participants twice, you got the field. So you got the next highest score out of the guys we chose, and we just ran with it all day, looking at box scores, paying attention.
Right. And we learned that the field is a good thing.
Yeah, the field won once, and the guy Keith who had the field, he was the big winner yesterday. So he won six games in the overall prize, which was total cumulative score.
Right.
He ran away with it. I think he beat the next closest person by 49 points.
That's
so
impressive.
That's great.
You know, it's because like he didn't have a dog in that fight going into it,
right?
You know, so to speak. But then he specifically has players that he's rooting for,
right?
Going all the way through, which I thought was really cool. Our randomizer, I don't care if it's a plug or not, random.org, the greatest website name of all time.
Random.
It is like the first website ever. I love it. It looks great.
Yeah.
So it was cool. It definitely made it like a super interesting day. Aside from everything that was going on, and speaking of everything that was going on, there were some major upsets.
Yeah.
My bracket was busted pretty early.
Yeah.
Ron, it's bruised. I don't know if it's busted, but it's definitely bruised.
Still alive.
So I think the biggest one we talked about was it Georgia State?
Yeah, Georgia State with the
with Ron Bunkfoot Hunter.
Yeah.
If you guys don't know, in their previous game, Ron Hunter, who's their head coach, had hurt himself by celebrating. He pulled a Grammatica and he tore his Achilles. And so like we're watching the game and we didn't know that ahead of time. And we're like, why is that guy sitting on a swivelly chair? Like, what is happening?
Just spinning around on the sideline there.
And then the thought process was like, do you think the other coaches are jealous that he has a swivelly chair?
Yeah.
Like, they have to be. Like, I would be. I mean, and he was, at one point he fell off of the chair. Like, a guy hit a big shot and he fell off.
I wonder, like, if he lobbied hard for, like, a better chair. Like, if he wanted just, like, the primo office chair with the high back and the, you know.
The ergonomic chair.
Just spinning around like
he
that.
He essentially had, like, a shop chair.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, no back. Mm-hmm. Really good casters because it was really sliding around on that floor. And then to celebrate, he had, like, a scooter. So he went from being called Bunkfoot Hunter to Scooter Hunter.
Scooter Hunter.
Which is really good. So that was fascinating. That was a really good game. But there were a lot of games that were like that all day.
Yeah. The stat I read was that after the first three games, like less than 1% of the people participating in ESPN's bracket challenge had perfect brackets live. So those two big upsets early, you know, definitely threw the day into a little bit of chaos.
Into disarray.
And set the stage for pretty...
I just got killed because I rode with Larry Brown.
Yeah.
So, full disclosure, I'm a Pistons fan. Next to Chuck Daly, he's the greatest Pistons coach ever. There were times yesterday when he looked like he didn't know where he was at.
Yeah, he is an old, old person. And, you know, he's forgotten more about basketball than I'll ever know.
Yes.
But, it was...
But he was looking for Rashid at one point.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, where's Scoreless Williamson?
Yeah. And his team lost on probably the most interesting play of the day, which was the goaltending that may or may not have been a goaltending.
Yeah. You know, they showed it a bunch of times. I think they didn't... You know what's weird is I forget which of the networks we were watching, if it was TNT or CBS or True TV. Which,
yeah, somewhere in that.
Yeah. But they refused to show the best angle.
Yeah, they kept showing this angle from above the basket where you can't really see where the ball is in relation to the rim. If it's above or below the rim, there's no depth to it.
And so I had seen someone post on the internet or on Twitter shortly thereafter an angle that looked like the ball might have been in the cylinder. I don't know. It was a weird way to end. And then it ended really quickly.
Yeah, that happened. And the refs seemed to gather and discuss it, but I don't know if they were going to change the call or if they were discussing the call. And then all of a sudden, like, neither team had a timeout.
Right.
And it was just a play. And, of course, SMU settled for a bad shot.
Theme of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, bad shots.
Yeah.
Just
got a rebound and then another bad shot.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because all day everyone was down 1 point.
Yeah.
And they kept launching threes.
Yeah, you don't need 3 points.
Right. Yeah, and I think your buddy Keith had the stat, his made-up stat, that like 89% from three when it's a big shot.
Yeah.
You know, like in the tournament that tends to happen.
Yeah, that's the theory that we have that if you're down three possessions with less than a minute to go, you're going to hit that three. 90% of the time, you're going to cut that lead from 8-5 with 40 seconds
right.
to go. It's just, it's like
it's inevitable.
Yeah, it's a universal law at this point.
It's attorneyism.
And,
but I think people were relying on that heavily yesterday, you know? And it's weird because I also feel like the low percentage shots, and realistically, like nobody was shooting 15 footers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was
shooting all perimeter.
Right. And I think that it's really funny because the NBA it's all about spacing now. Mm-hmm. The entire league is all about spacing. It's all about shooters. But in these college games, you know, I don't think they're playing to their strengths. I think they're trying to be those teams and they're trying to do spacing, but they don't have Steph Curry.
Yeah.
And they don't have Klay Thompson. You know, and they don't. So I think it's, you know, it's something Belichick does but it's something Belichick does where he'll play to the strength of his players.
Right.
You know, so last year was all press defense because he had Darrell Revis.
Yes. Yeah.
This year probably won't be that way because he won't have Darrell Revis. These college basketball teams, it seems like they're just trying to do spacing.
Yeah, that was I was stunned watching yesterday. Like, as good as the games were on paper, and there were six games that were decided by 1 point, which is when you're watching basketball for 13 hours.
It's pretty impressive.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good indication that you're entertained. But none of the games were, like, amazing games.
Right.
They were exciting, but it did seem as if the teams were almost trying harder to lose the games than trying to win the games. There was never a game where teams were going back and forth, knocking down big shots, getting big plays. It was, you'd get in the last minute of these games that were close, and it was just a free for all.
Yeah, crazy
plays, bad shots.
Like, why weren't they setting plays? Not enough timeouts taken, right? Not enough plays coming out of timeouts that were set. It seemed like it was just like top of the key, hike it up.
Yeah.
And it did work in some games, but I don't think it's the best idea to rely on that.
Yeah. You know? It makes you wonder, like, you know, what is the strategy going into this where, you know, with games that were, games within 3 points, we never saw a team foul the other team intentionally
to put on the line all day we were just yelling in. Foul him.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you foul him?
Yeah.
And I think that, like, yeah, I don't know. You know, we watched Arizona. I think Arizona was probably the most impressive team of the day.
Yeah. We didn't get to see much of Kentucky, but,
I
think Kentucky-Hampton was, that really wasn't a game that would be a true indication of
deemed to be a blowout.
Yeah.
But even Kentucky played sloppy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Early on, they were missing a lot of shots. They do play in the low post pretty regularly. And I know they've got pretty good perimeter players as well, but they were just missing a lot of shots in the post, which I thought was fascinating, where Arizona just like seemed to take down Texas Southern. And again, it is Texas Southern, you know, but I think they're probably going to have an easy run going through. I've got them going to the Final Four.
Okay.
One of my Final Four teams.
Yeah, that I think that Arizona-Kentucky game, if that's what happens in the Final Four, like I would like whoever comes out of that game.
Yeah.
Favorite.
I don't think that, you know, no disrespect to the Dukes or Gonzagas or Villanovas, but it seems like whoever comes out of that is going to be the national champ.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're just, and it's really amazing because what was your stat yesterday about Kentucky? Like, they don't have a player below like 6'6".
Oh, yeah. They're the shortest player in their starting lineup is 6'5". And a lot of teams are going to be playing against their tallest guy in their lineup is going to be 6'7", 6'8". And, you know, Kentucky has two near 7-footers that start, and they're all NBA ready. And I used to really despise Calipari and kind of what he stood for and what he does. But now I admire him in that, like, he took a look at the landscape and, you know, the best players are only going to play college for 1, maybe 2 years.
Right.
Very rarely will they play more than 1 year if they're really highly touted prospects. So he's like, you know what, I want to go to a school that's got a good brand. Kentucky's obviously got a great college basketball brand.
Right.
And he's turned them He's turned that school into an NBA factory, and it's really interesting to see all that talent pooling in one place rather than, you know, Duke still gets guys, and every right. once in a while somebody else will flare up with a good that, but like, you know, a good chunk of the best prospects are going to Kentucky, and they're learning to play good basketball.
Yeah. There.
Like, it's not like they just have this talent and they just, you know, run over people. Last year was a great example. Like, they had kind of a lousy regular season, but they got into the tournament and they looked amazing. The game Michigan lost to them was, you know, those Harrison brothers were incredible.
They're still there.
Yeah.
Which is a testament too. Like, it seems like it's less one and done. It seems like he's getting at least 2 years out.
Yeah.
I think for the good of the NBA, the more, at least 2 years in college, I think helps the pro game quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because then they're really learning how to play basketball. And you know, it's the downside of what's, yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Like, Calipari for me was, everyone kind of looks at him as a villain.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a really, really good coach. Mm-hmm. He does have unbelievable talent, you know?
Yeah.
He's kind of akin to Nick Saban in the way that he does things, except he's not Darth Vader.
Right.
but it's weird because in the era of AAU, in the era of all these kids playing together in AAU and then deciding, you know, like, I just want to jump right to the pros, or I just want to do 1 year, they're not really getting a lot of basketball fundamentals under their belt. And I think, I forget who was talking about, like, Kentucky could take down someone in the East.
Yeah, there was a lot of chatter. Larry right. Brown said it, that
Larry Brown,
Kentucky
yeah.
would make the playoffs.
Well, he was looking for Rasheed Wallace. Yeah,
yeah.
He said, yeah, so...
Yeah.
That, and Chris and I kind of scoffed at that. Like, even our hometown Pistons, they would have a hard time with Drummond and Greg Monroe.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's inevitable. Like, those guys have been playing for a long time. Mm-hmm. Even though Drummond's really young, he's terrifyingly explosive.
Right.
And I don't know, I haven't seen anyone in college basketball that has his kind of explosiveness. Not yeah. that they won't. Right.
And then there's the piece that a lot of guys who play at Kentucky, especially their, you know, their big guys like Towns and Cauley-Stein.
Yeah.
They're the two best big guys.
Yeah.
Like, they're not playing against people who are better than them.
No. Or if you're Okafor is like the third.
Yeah.
Right. I think.
And if you're playing in the NBA, even if you're, you know, Andre Drummond, your top 10 center in the NBA, at least top 10 talent wise.
Yeah.
You know, 40 games a year, you're probably playing against somebody who's better than you. Zach Randolph or Boogie Cousins.
You're playing the Grizzlies,
yeah.
right? You're playing Zebo,
mm-hmm.
and you're playing Marc Gasol.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's like Anthony Davis,
yeah.
right? Anthony Davis, though, I still don't consider him like a 100% like center.
Yeah.
He's like a really, really big stretch four to me, just because he can take the ball so far out.
Yeah, he can do everything.
He can do everything. But I think that all those guys have the ability. Cauley-Stein I'm really intrigued by what he's going to do.
Yeah.
Because he handles the ball like a guard. And for a guy that's like, what is he, like 7'1" or 7?
He's up there, yeah, I think.
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, I think he's got room to grow. I think he's been on that team maybe the longest.
Yeah.
And I think that shows a lot of his development. I like what Calipari's doing. I like him. God knows he wants those kids to stay longer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, clearly, the longer they're there, the better he is.
Right.
That said, he is always reloading. He's always going back to the well and finding another feed.
Yeah, I don't think he's, like, the thing I admire about him is that he doesn't have any delusions about what it is college basketball has become.
Right.
Where I do think, you know, that... other higher level coaches.
Are you saying Krzyzewski?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Perfect. I mean, I don't want to say that Mike Krzyzewski is deluded, but I think that Mike Krzyzewski would sell you a bill of goods that's like, oh no, this is about student athletes,
right?
And this is about developing talent and the purity of the college game. And Calipari would just say, this is about all those things. But I'm not gonna lie to this player and my fans and say, oh yeah, you're gonna be here for 2, 3, 4 years. It's like, if you're good enough, you'll only be here for a year.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, it's my job to get you as good as I possibly yeah. can in that year.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna send you out in the world. And if you're successful, the next 16, 17 year old version of you is gonna come to me and say, hey, I want what you did
right.
for John Wall, for Andre Drummond, for you know,
Derrick Rose,
yeah, Anthony Davis,
yeah,
like, no, like, and just I send him out in the world and
it's a valid point, man. He is the best pro maker we've seen, I think. And those guys all come out with like a really strong fundamental basketball sense, right?
Yeah.
And so it is weird that he does get dogged a lot for being the personality that he is, or for you know, accepting the fact, like you're saying, he's just accepting the fact that he's not gonna be able to keep these kids forever,
right?
Right.
Yeah. His job is to get the best talent to win the most games and to win championships.
Yeah, it's weird.
And
right?
if that's the bottom line of his job, and the landscape is set up in a specific way, I can't fault him for pursuing that success. I mean, we both do it in our careers, and so does everybody else in the world.
Right. Like, yeah, you want to be successful.
Yeah.
And he's the most successful. Yeah. Clearly Arizona next best. You don't see Duke going to the Final Four, right?
I'm always skeptical of Duke. Mm-hmm. They've let me down. I picked them to lose in Utah, Utah in the Sweet 16. And that's, you know, I don't know that there's a whole lot of strategy in that. It just, Utah seems to me like the first team that will give Duke trouble. Yeah. And in the last decade, they usually lose to the first team that gives them real trouble.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting tournament. I don't want to say it's hard to see Kentucky not going undefeated. I think it'd be great if they did go undefeated. I think that's, again, great for Calipari, but I do think it should be a pretty spectacular Final Four.
Yeah.
And Villanova on the other end, you know, mm-hmm. Villanova's a great team. I think that bracket will be good.
It is great that if Kentucky does it, if they go undefeated, I think they'll be 40-0 if they do.
Yeah.
I think they were 34-0 coming into the tournament. And I am convinced that at least two of the games they play, they'll play teams that have a chance to beat them.
Yeah.
I
agree.
And I wasn't alive when Indiana went undefeated.
Right.
And, you know, I've never seen a Triple Crown winner. And
right.
I never, you know, in, well, Triple Crown winner horsing, I'd never seen a Triple Crown winner in baseball when Cabrera won it. Like, more than anything, as a sports fan, regardless of who it is, probably outside of Ohio State.
Right.
I want to see historically great things happen.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I had a distaste for the 96, 97, 98 Bulls.
Sure.
But looking back at that, like, I'm really glad that I watched all those games.
Well, was your distaste for the Bulls because you're a Pistons fan?
Yes.
So you just grew up hating Michael Jordan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and like, it's funny, I would always root against the Bulls until they got to the finals.
Oh,
and then
really?
I think once they were in the finals, it's like, yeah, at this point, like,
yeah,
why not just do it?
Well, you didn't root for Karl Malone and
no.
John Stockton?
I think the only team I ever wanted the Bulls to lose to in the finals was Barkley's Suns team.
Okay, yeah.
That was the one year that...
Barkley feels like that was his... That was his year.
Yeah.
Like he thought he, and so did I. I mean, growing up, because it's funny, I listened to Barkley the other day and he talked about how he always thought he was the best player.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, realistically was for a long time. And then he said in that series, that's when he was like, wow, this guy might be better than me.
Yeah. You play your best and you still lose.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I've heard him tell that story a few times, and I think that's why a guy like him, like, it probably burns him that he doesn't have a title.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think he, you know, there's got to be comfort in the thought of like, all right, when I had my best shot, when I had my best teammates,
yeah,
when I was playing my best, we didn't lose because we didn't like leave something out there on the floor.
Right.
We just ran into a juggernaut.
Yeah. Yeah. And, he's not Karl Malone in it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think Karl Malone still wakes up in the morning is angry that he doesn't have a title.
Yeah.
But they, you know, nobody was better than those Bulls.
Yeah.
I, being a Pistons fan, I loved those Bulls. You know, just once they beat Detroit, I was. It's kind of like when LeBron beat the 2000 Pistons, 2004 Pistons, 2005 after 2004.
Yeah, I think that was 2007. Was
2007.
The year,
yeah. After that, I was kind of like, well, you know, they've had an amazing run. This guy's amazing. This guy's dominant. It was kind of my same thought process about Michael. I just love the way he played. I love the way he changed his game as he got older, which is like something that athletes seem to have the hardest time doing is changing the way they go about playing the older they get, because he didn't have the leaping ability that he had when he was younger. So he took a lot more mid-range jump shots, you know?
Yeah, he played smarter.
Yeah, and I think we said this yesterday. Like, Jordan didn't take a lot of threes. You know, it was too low of a percentage shot for him, I think. And so he was all mid-range guy. And so, like, for me, watching him develop his game into a smarter way made him more dominant, in my opinion. And so, yeah, I was a big fan of those Bulls. But, I can understand the distaste.
Yeah, and I think, like, looking back at that that time, like, there's nothing I wanted more than for Grant Hill and the Pistons to be successful.
Yeah.
And part of that was, you know, well, when we had Grant before he got hurt, Jordan was there.
Yeah.
So,
no, and it, I mean, Grant was an amazing player. Mm-hmm. I think Grant surprised a lot of people coming out of Duke just because he was on Leitner's team, just because he wasn't. Honestly, it was kind of similar to the way Jordan came out of college, you know, like where he was a super talented player, but he wasn't the number one. And then I remember when we got him, like I was ecstatic because he just like shot out of a cannon. You know, and I am a little reminiscent of like what could have happened if Grant wouldn't have got hurt. But we talked about this last night, actually. You know, Grant got hurt and we traded him for Ben Wallace.
Yeah.
And Ben Wallace did as much as Chauncey Billups did to transform.
Yeah, those were the two guys that, and you know, Ben was on the team. The transformation happened before Phillips showed up with Ben becoming a fan favorite.
Yeah, him and Stackhouse. And,
yeah. And yeah, just this tough, athletic, you know, tough team to play against.
Right.
They started that, and then getting, you know, Chauncey and Rip.
Yeah.
Cemented that.
Kind of got that and, core. Not totally on the topic of the tournament, but it did happen last night. James Harden dropped 50.
Yes.
50 and 10, I think, right?
I think 50, yeah, and 10 rebounds, maybe more.
Yep.
22 from 25 from the line.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
That's like a whole team.
Yeah, I didn't look at the stats, but I would be surprised if the other team had that many free throw makes or attempts in the game.
Did you see, I don't know, because again, after so much tournament yesterday, there was also like a comatose state for the both of us.
Sure, absolutely.
Have you seen the video of Russell being blocked by the rim?
I have not.
Yeah, last night Russell went up really hard.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was the quintessential, I'm going to murder the rim dunk and the dunk.
The rim murdered him.
Yeah, so it's if you get a chance, check that out.
It's
getting interesting.
Well, and I don't know if you had the chance to see, but the Thunder have come out today and they're shutting Durant down indefinitely.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, all basketball exercises stopped
because
of ongoing soreness in his foot.
Yeah.
That's
in a hope to keep him.
I think that they have to be realistic about his injury, and maybe they haven't been. You know, smart basketball people will say that a foot injury is a potentially devastating injury if you never get right.
Right.
You look at Bill Walton, you look at Greg Oden.
Yep.
These are both guys, large guys too, who had this issue, similar fractures and either rushed to get back and didn't work. I mean, Walton hurt his foot after the Blazers won the title, and it was almost a decade before he had any relevance in the NBA again.
Yep.
When he showed up as a reserve on the 86 Celtics.
Yeah.
And as a basketball fan, and specifically as a Kevin Durant fan, like I would hate if he weren't in my life.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And that his stunning talent and all of that. And, it will be interesting to see what happens because of this. I mean, now, that team is without Ibaka. They're without Durant for an indefinite period of time. They have Russell Westbrook, who's a maniac.
but he's doing it on his own.
But how does that and is that sustainable? Can he?
You know,
Can he redline it 40 minutes a game?
You know, I don't deny that he could probably do that. But they're not exactly lighting the league on fire. Like they're not.
No, they're still right on the edge of the playoffs.
Yeah, you know,
and the. The Pelicans have a shot to get in there, and And
Davis is also sitting out though, right?
Yes.
Davis is also out. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think if Davis comes back and he's healthy, for a run, I wouldn't be surprised if the Pelicans made it in. I just don't know that it's sustainable without Ibaka. You know, I love Mitch McGarry. I love the bench that they have, but Ibaka is one of their main players, and to make the playoffs with him out, even if it's for a couple of weeks or even a week, you can really slip a lot in the standings.
Yeah, right now Oklahoma City's got the last spot. They're a game and a half or a game ahead of New Orleans. They each have 14 games left, so pretty tight.
Yep.
Two of the three Thunder's best player won't be playing in those games.
Yeah.
And there's nobody above them that's going to fall out, I think. Even Dallas, who's swooning.
Yeah, Dallas. It's super disappointing to watch Dallas play basketball just because they were the most efficient offensive team in the NBA. And then they got Rondo.
Right. A personal favorite of mine.
Who, right.
I still can't, like, there's... Loving Rondo is, like... It's like loving a television show that a lot of people think is weird or not great. It's problematic.
Yeah.
It's tough to see him and Rick Carlisle, who I like a lot.
Yeah.
Struggle.
Well, Carlisle, I feel like Rondo got dumped on Carlisle.
Yes.
He doesn't play Carlisle style of basketball. I know the whole them arguing because Carlisle had him running plays and he wanted to do his own thing. And I clearly don't think he's going to be there next year, but I've never seen a team so handicapped by adding a good player.
Yeah,
you know, at all intents and purposes, I think he's going to the Lakers. I know him and Kobe have had some sort of lunch or breakfast of some sort. I think Kobe's still going to try and make a run. I think that's why he shut himself down. I think that's why the team shut him down.
Yep.
It's the most I've seen of this kind of injury to superstardom in the NBA in a long time, if ever, that I can really remember this many superstars being hurt. I'm intrigued to see what happens in the playoffs, right? I mean, to me, it's like Golden State's healthy. They have all their players.
Yep.
They're probably going to do some resting, I would imagine. I mean, I think the Spurs have really brought that thought process in, even though they're really young.
Yeah, there was actually, I don't know if you saw this, but a week ago, they had a game and they rested some players, and Steve Kerr got an email from some fans who had driven from South Dakota or something, and they'd come all this way to see the Warriors, and the Splash Brothers didn't play in that game, and they were justifiably upset. And I really admired the response that Kerr had, which was very even. It's like, I understand. At the same time, we have a duty to entertain our fans. We also want to try to win.
Yeah.
And
you can.
He didn't apologize for it. He said, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
But we want to win a title.
Yeah. I mean, that's in modern basketball, because the NBA season's too long.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think all of us think that way. And, Kerr has to do what's best for his team, and he's clearly done that the whole way through. Even though they're young, we've seen what a lot of minutes on players can do to them.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they will wear down. I mean, we've seen it with LeBron.
Yeah. See it with that. That's the primary knock against Thibodeau and
Chicago.
Thibodeau
runs his guys to death.
Runs his guys in the ground. And maybe that's what happened with Derrick Rose. I'm not going to take a side on that argument because that's a slippery slope.
Right.
But there's definitely injury impact this year.
Do you think Tibbs changes his thought process after this or no?
I don't think so.
That just seems to be the way he's just full bore all the time.
Yeah. And, that's what people who are really good at their jobs do. And, I think you can see a little bit of Popovich in him, where for years, I think Popovich was a harder coach than he is now.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll change if Thibodeau gets the right players, if he gets the right ownership group, he stays.
Well, that's the question though, if he stays in Chicago.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to win without Derrick Rose, and it sucks. it sucks what's happened to Derrick Rose continually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I understand a lot of people who have had injuries, including like Penny Hardaway, are saying they don't think he's playing. He can't play the way he did before.
Right.
You know, and that goes back to if he does, if and when he comes back, and I'm sure he will be back again, does he change his style of play? Does he change the way he does things so that he is comfortable? But it's hard for any coach. I think Tibbs is a great coach. You know, clearly he's a great defensive coach. But I think that, you know, I think that clearly there's been a lot of wear and tear on his players. I'd be intrigued to see, one, if he comes back to Chicago. I know there's been a lot of talk about him maybe going elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of teams that could use a lot of good coaches. He's a very good coach.
Yeah, I don't think he would want too long for a job.
The Wizards would love to have Tibbs. I don't think they're on the list, but I know they're not too happy with their head coach. But then it's also intriguing. Didn't you say yesterday one of the guys in one of the tournament games is rumored to be Chicago's next?
Yeah, Fred Hoiberg.
Yeah.
you know, I think, and he's a name that's popped up before.
Yeah.
In coaching stuff, but you know, his team got beat by a 14 seed yesterday, so
it's crazy.
You know, I know it's a one and done tournament, but that would be a red flag.
That totally would be a red flag. Where's the level of preparation?
Mm-hmm.
Are you, because we see it all the time, like, you know, you're going to be playing a team that's good, like,
right.
they got this far, they're probably not going to be a pushover. So where's the level of preparation? Iowa State got worked. Like,
yeah,
all day.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that is a red flag. I'd be intrigued to see what that does to his stock going forward. You hit on something yesterday that was fascinating, that we, with all these amazing games, there have been so many 1-point games, close games. We really haven't seen a transcendent player pop out yet.
Yeah, there was the one cat from UCLA who hit nine, well, he hit eight threes, and then he was gifted, in my opinion, a ninth. That was the game winner.
There's the kid from Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, D'Angelo, can't think of his last name.
Is it Russell?
Yes,
yeah.
D'Angelo Russell. So there were some guys who were showing, but we haven't seen, and you're not, I don't think you're guaranteed to see it every year, but usually somebody gets drafted high because they played so well in the
game. Yeah, we don't know who's going to be, you know, this year's Trey Burke.
Right.
This year's
Steph Curry,
Dwayne Wade. Like, that person who comes in and is just transcendent and makes it, you know.
It feels like it's inevitable, though,
mm-hmm.
right? It feels like somebody's going to show at some point. We have the games on right now. We're in the second day today. And so I'm intrigued to see if we do see someone flash.
Yeah.
Klay Thompson, similar, right? Or no? I don't remember.
I don't remember his impact in the tournament.
I don't know. Klay just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Was it? I don't know if it was I can't remember back that far, but if it was a combine that he just showed up in. Because I think we're seeing more of that, too. A lot of what we see in the NFL is like workout warriors who just. I think the kid from Dante Exum from Australia last year was one of those guys, and he's done not a lot in the NBA so far. So I'm intrigued to see, one, if we see somebody flash that will end up being a high pick because of what they do in this tournament. But two, if we see that again, we're so in just kind of a workout warrior.
Yeah. I think part of that is that last year at this time, there was all this chatter about how this next draft class is going to be great.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were great players, and like Wiggins and Parker were pretty impressive, but you know, 9 months after the draft, and everybody's kind of just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, there's, you know, Wiggins looks like he's going to be a superstar.
Wiggins looks,
as
good,
you'd
good move for him.
Yeah.
He ended up in the right place.
Yeah. He team that will love him.
Him and Zach LaVine forever.
Yeah.
Like, I can't wait until they build an actual team around those guys.
Yeah.
But Zach LaVine, even, is a little up and down.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely a physical, you know, specimen, crazy talent. The dunk contest was incredible.
Yeah, as Chris and I call it, the drunk contest, because we imbibe while we're watching.
It's the only way to do it.
It's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
We actually watched it this year for the 3-point shooting contest,
which did not disappoint.
Right.
Steph
is Steph. Mm-hmm. Is Steph forever? I want to see I've got an idea. I want to see Steph Curry, if he's in it every year, he's going to beat everybody. I want Klay Thompson disappointed, but I want to see Steph go head to head with Ray Allen.
Yeah.
you know, or you know, bring old Larry Legend in. Like, I want to see, or Robert Horry. What's Robert Horry doing?
Yeah, right? You want to get, like, a fantasy league all-timer.
Yeah. Yeah. Three-point shooting contest. I'm sure those
guys can still shoot.
Well, that's the thing about it, right? Like, you couldn't put Jordan in a dunk contest now or Neek in a dunk contest because it's so much of your body, it's so much based around your athleticism. Not that shooting isn't.
Instead of a three-point contest, what if they just play horse?
Oh my God, I would love
like,
that.
Like,
yeah,
let's put this on tape. Like, let's produce a television show.
Yeah,
where it's like the old Home Run Derby show.
Oh, I love it.
From the
Harmon
60s.
Killebrew?
Yeah,
yeah. And I'm
it's
all
gonna
over
be
it.
You know, it'll be modern stars and retired stars.
Yeah.
and just playing horse.
Yeah,
like why not? I'd watch that.
Well, it'll literally be called Just Playing Horse.
Just Playing Horse.
All right, we're gonna get that into production.
Yeah.
Yep. I think we'll probably write something about that, which is great. I would love it. I think it'd be great. I think it'd be awesome to see. Who would win? I mean, if you got Steph versus... So, it's a little unfortunate for Larry because he is quite a bit older.
Yeah.
That said, he's still completely deadly. But Steph versus Ray Allen, right?
Yeah.
I think those two are the closest to being... you know, their similarities are so close.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray's got the greatest shot in the history of the playoffs, I think, in my opinion, with that fall away. He's a clutch guy. Steph's a clutch guy. I'd really like to see that happen.
Yeah, maybe that'll be the season premiere.
I would love that. Yes, yeah. I would love that. The trash talking alone. I like the free throw contest that Curry and Kerr have, which I think is fascinating.
I don't know that they do
this all the time. So after every practice, they have a free throw contest, and Steph almost always wins.
Yeah,
I think they just
shoot till they miss. Or?
I think they shoot. I forget how they do it. They do it in rounds, but I think they shoot to a certain number. And I think maybe to 10.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think ESPN had gone there and kind of like watched them do it. And Kerr always gives him a run for his money, but it's like Curry clearly. And it's funny because ESPN was shooting it and Curry missed his first shot. He's like, that's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
You know?
It.
Yeah.
Now you're in real trouble.
Yeah. Right. Well, it reminds me of the story of Jordan when he was on the Wizards with Rip. I think they would always play one-on-one after practices because Jordan wanted to make Rip. Well, it's clear, one, that Jordan probably didn't really want to be playing. I think that was more of an ownership thing than it was.
Yeah. If he wanted to own a team, the way he had the cost was him
putting in a season
playing
or two.
On the team, yeah.
Yeah. But trying to develop Rip to be like just a deadly shooter, and thank you, Michael Jordan, because that worked out in our favor.
Pistons got a banner.
we won't do too much homerism on this podcast or on our website, but we are from Detroit, so there will be
it'll leak in.
Yeah.
I don't know that we'll ever pursue topics that are directly related to it, but
yeah, we're not gonna talk about Joique Bell's compliment in the backfield next year.
Yeah.
But we will talk about the draft, you know.
Yeah.
Live the drunk contest. We have a number of things that the NFL drafts. We like to pretty much bet on any of this stuff.
Yeah, in line with the pool we talked about earlier today for the NFL draft, I'm sure we'll come up with something. We'll probably come up with something for the NBA draft similar.
Yeah.
We'll share that all.
Last year's NFL draft, we were just the worst at selecting players.
Yeah, we were doing it the wrong way. We didn't have the materials we needed.
We were
prepared. I envision like in the show House of Cards, Francis Underwood has like a whiteboard that has magnets with the names of all the senators and congressmen. And if we can't get to that place,
but we can.
And if anybody wants to sponsor us, and like you know, we'll wear your shirt or whatever. If you can supply the magnets and the whiteboard,
that's it.
We're in.
We'll come up with the idea.
Yeah,
yeah. The gambling's on us. That's funny.
We'll do that. And we've got.
It's almost continual. Like I was thinking about this the other day. I think that we can at least once every 1 or 2 months, we have something that we can do something like ridiculously gamble on. And then not in the conventional sense, right?
Yeah, and it's you're not gambling on the outcome of a game. You're
right.
Gambling on something that's important to sports, but it's not really sports.
Right.
You know,
home
run derby, drafts, drunk contest,
Kentucky Derby, we'll figure something out.
Yeah, there's ways to and that I think that's kind of the fun of what we do, why we decided to do this is that you can talk about, you know, war and Corsi percentage and all these, you know, obscure stats. But the fun of sports is sort of the way it makes you feel. and yeah. the way it makes you laugh.
Yeah, I think that's how our conversations have always been. And it's funny because when we met each other, like, I grew up as a sports fanatic, right? Like, I read the sports page with my dad, like, every day. And the drubbing of ESPN had kind of, like, knocked me out of the sports stratosphere a little bit. You know, I took a step back just because, like, there were too many talking heads.
Yeah.
Right? And then we had met, and then you kind of, we had started doing stuff like the draft and the drunk contest. And I was like, this is the fun of sports.
Yeah.
Like, this is where it's at, you know? And even the tournament, like, that's why I love the NCAA tournament, because that is, without having to do anything else, it is the most fun thing to take part in.
Yeah.
Or as you say, the first week of the NHL playoffs is your...
Yeah, that's my that's my sports wife.
Your mecha sports wife.
It is, like, you know, there were 16 games yesterday,
yeah.
and we were able to see the end or the relevant moments.
Yeah.
of all 16 yeah. games with a group of friends, and didn't really have a rooting interest outside no. of,
well, our team, you know, both of us are Michigan fans. Michigan wasn't in it. Even if they were, you know, it'd still be the same way.
Yeah.
I like that, you know, while, because I had a player from, you know, Texas Southern, I'm actually rooting for someone from Texas Southern. Like, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I loved how quickly, once you knew who your player was and that player was relevant to the pool and was scoring points, like, how quickly I found myself looking at their Twitter page and,
yeah.
like, reading their bio and, yeah. like, you know, Stainbrook.
Stainbrook is the Phil Kessel of NCAA basketball. I don't know if you guys are all familiar with Phil Kessel, but... He essentially looks like he's been at a college frat party for 4 years continuously.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm amazed that he's an athlete. I don't watch a lot of hockey. I mean, basketball, baseball, and football are my main sports. I'm going to watch hockey just for Phil Kessel.
Yeah. Yeah. You're in with Phil?
I'm in with Phil.
It's too bad he plays on the worst team.
The Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah. yeah. Well, I just want to know how long are his shifts? Are they shorter than everybody else's?
Is
he a well-conditioned athlete?
It's like
late night high life and Hungry Howie's a part of his conditioning.
I wouldn't be surprised. you know, he doesn't look like he's doing paleo or anything like that.
Has he always looked that way?
Yeah.
He's always
been a great, and you know what? Like, it's funny because he's not just a good hockey player,
yeah.
But he is. He's a higher echelon
yeah.
goal scorer in the league. He's great for Team USA.
He's from the U.S.
Yeah.
Oh, of course he's from the U.S. That explains everything. The morbidly obese hockey players from the States.
I don't want Phil to come after us. Not morbidly obese.
He's not morbidly. I mean, yeah. All jokes aside.
In a game of which one of these things doesn't belong, he would be the obvious choice.
But I'm glad to hear it's hard for me to say because I don't know a lot about him. I walked into Chris's office the other day, and for some reason, Phil Kessel is up on his computer, and I'm like, who is that, and what does he do? And you're like, he's a hockey player, and I was like, no, he's not.
Yeah. He skates 20 minutes a night
with
some of the greatest athletes in the world. And
what police department beer league is he a part of?
Yeah.
That's like the first thing I thought of when I saw him. I'm all in on Phil Kessel. But same thing with Stainbrook yesterday.
Yeah.
If you guys haven't seen Stainbrook, he looks like the most non-basketball player I've ever seen in my life. He wears like goggles. He has like tinted Oakleys,
mm-hmm.
and his jersey is like four sizes bigger than everybody else's.
He's very scruffy looking.
He's the
low end of the muscle tone team.
He's the Chris Farley of college basketball.
Yeah. But he was great.
He was great. Yeah. He won you.
Scored 20 points and you know, led Xavier to a victory.
I can't believe it.
And
of course he's from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I love Cincinnati more than anything, but of course he's from Cincinnati. That's perfect. Needless to say, it was an insane first day of the tournament. I don't know who's the big, who do we have as the big pull for today? I know State already won, right?
Yeah, State won today. You know, looking at the matchups, we will get to see Duke.
Duke's the late game?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm excited to see Gonzaga.
Yeah, but one of your friends yesterday said something interesting about Gonzaga, which is they've lost the little bit of the shine, a little bit has worn off on them, or what is it?
Well, I mean, the Gonzaga myth or the legend of Gonzaga started right around when I started watching basketball with those guys. Like, we were still in high school when they became the team that won games they shouldn't, and every year were kind of a darling. And, you know, now they've moved to a place where they're a number two seed.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, for the last decade, they've not just been like a, you know, a mid-major darling, but like a coming into the tournament, they've always been seen as a threat.
Yeah, and they are. I mean, they've I guess kind of turned into the Boise State of college basketball in a little bit of a way, right? The weird thing to me though is like, who is their most famous player?
Like, Adam Morrison.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I think he would be.
Where is Adam Morrison? Speaking of, which one of these does not belong?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you think?
For a while there, I thought he played Adam on Girls, but
he is the same person.
He is Adam Driver.
He is Adam Driver. They're about the same size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, but he was one of those guys we talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were watching the tournament that year and you're like, "What? Who is that guy?" Right? That mustache alone made him an all-time player in my category. But that also got him drafted really high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he looked and he kind of played like Kevin McHale.
Yeah, and he did. You know what? That's funny. I forgot that was the main comparison for him, was that he was very much McHale.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turned out to be very much not McHale.
Yeah.
Yeah, McHale was just all arms. That was, you know, Kevin McHale's playing style is, I'm going to annoy the hell out of you.
Yes.
Yeah, which I love. But I think we see a lot of that, too. Like, who was the kid a couple years ago from BYU? The one that
Jimmer.
Jimmer Fredette. Yeah, yeah, it was just a scoring machine.
Yep, and there was, you know, Doug McDermott.
Oh yeah, Dougie McBuckets.
Last year, he's an okay pro.
Yeah, he's all right.
He's a piece of the rotation in Chicago.
If he ends up becoming something close to Kyle Korver, right?
Yeah.
And Kyle Korver was one of those guys as well, right?
Yeah.
And Korver's now a main cog in the Atlanta machine.
Absolutely. You
know? That guy, he's talking about spacing. Like, and it's funny because what I love about Korver is he doesn't wait for the ball. He moves to the ball, right? And that's what I'd like to see. When spacing clearly is the way that the NBA is going. There are some more big men coming up, which you talked about earlier, which I think is fascinating. But it's all about getting open, finding space, getting behind a three-point line. And what I'm not seeing enough of, we saw a lot of movement yesterday in desperation. We didn't see a lot of calculated movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was not, I touched on this earlier, didn't see a single team that played a game that's, I don't want to go so far as to say it, I didn't see a single team that looked prepared.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a lot of teams just flying by the seat of their pants.
Yeah.
Which
is weird because you worked so hard to get to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. I was stunned, and it was like the two number three seed team, like the three seeded teams that got knocked off. Like I would be hard pressed. It wasn't that, you know, watching that game, it's like, oh, this 14 seed is really a good team.
Right.
It's this third seeded team doesn't seem like a really good team.
Yeah, it's weird, right? And clearly they were deserving of that spot because of the record they had during the year. But I don't know what it was. It just seemed like you said, it seemed like they just weren't prepared for what was going to happen.
Yeah, it was the play was sloppy.
Yeah.
In strange ways. And, you know, dribbling into double, triple coverage.
Yeah.
Hanging onto the ball for too long.
Yep.
Coming out of, you know, not managing the clock. It was a very odd day for that. And I wonder if today we'll see.
Right.
More preparedness, just a better brand of basketball.
Yeah,
and even if the basketball is bad, it's still super fun.
Oh yeah, oh 100%. Well, I mean, that was the great thing about yesterday is it was. I mean, all the way through, it was. I mean, because we were watching until like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
and then we somehow got turned. Somehow the television turned to spring training.
Yeah, watching some spring training. and last year the late games last year I remember being really good, whereas this year they were all kind of duds.
It was kind of over. Yeah. I think like the mid-afternoon games were the best. The NC State game was a late game.
Yeah.
LSU NC State, which was amazing.
Yeah, that was the last good game. And then your last three were Hampton, Kentucky, Wofford, Arkansas.
Yeah. Wofford and Arkansas.
And Eastern Washington, Georgetown, which all were not great.
Not really. But that's all right. I mean, that's the tournament. There were way more games that were super exciting than I thought there would be.
Yeah.
It seems like today I've been score watching a little bit. It seems like it's been, you know, Michigan State won easily, mm-hmm. Kansas won easily. It seems like that's more what we're used to.
Yeah, there's nothing really grabbing the attention.
Yeah, the 8-9 games are usually a little bit closer. Like mm-hmm. Purdue-Cincy yesterday was really close. I'm sure that will happen today to some degree. But it was amazing. I mean, I can't wait to do it again next year. I thought it was – I think it's the best day in sports just for like a cumulative day, for an entire day.
It is up there with you know, all their favorite days. Championship Sunday in the NFL is always a great day.
Always a great day. Kentucky Derby
Day.
Derby is great just because it's so much preparation for such a small amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
My friends and I get together, and you'll clearly – we have to do it this year. We'll get together and do it. We all get together. We watch it somewhere at someone's house. We all get a horse. We all put money in. I think it's like $10, right? And then the person that wins, they get the money thrown at them. So that's how you take your earnings. You get doused with $10
bills. Yeah. It's not bad.
Which I'm on board with.
See, we'll have to – now I want to tweak that. It's like, all right, so what else can we put in? Like, we put in a buck, and whoever's horse that has the hardest trouble getting into the gate, you win that pool. Like, there's got to be other things, like, you know, the first horse that poops on TV. You know,
side bets,
yeah, like
prop culture.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is the thing Chris and I call prop culture. It's just our how many ways can we turn something that's not that interesting into being incredibly
interesting. How do you put some action on it,
right? And now that I know you can bet on the Oscars, I'm all in.
Yeah,
I just can't believe that I didn't put money on Birdman. I'm so depressed. We gotta go to Vegas.
So
I think this is a good way to wrap up. This is our first podcast. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's not as terrifying as I thought.
Yeah, it seems...
Well, maybe on the playback it will be. But hopefully that'll be different for the listeners.
We'll always have a shout out. We wish you could have been here. Our intern, Evan Winter, or as he's known, Evan Wintern.
Yeah.
He may never make it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Hopefully. maybe he will. I don't know. Yeah. I think if he is on the podcast, we're probably going to harass him for a while. I don't think we're going to give him headphones or a microphone.
Yeah. Just shout in the background.
He's going to shout in the background, and he's going to shout stats at us, I think. He's going to be our Tony Reale.
Yeah.
I think. But yeah, man, it was really good. I think that we're going to try and do one a week. We'll be posting pretty regularly on mostbasiccable.com, and you can follow us at anything at Most Basic Cable.
Yeah, we're at all of them.
We have every form of social media handled, way more than I thought existed.
Yeah, there's a lot.
All right, guys, we will talk to you next week.
All right, see ya.
Bye.